PRN.FM, bringing you new shows and fresh ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Oh, I always like to hear my musical cue. Hello, everybody. This is your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm returning again with one of my very favorite guests. Brad Coates and I have been friends for some 17 years. He was the guest on the 19th of July. We focused in on what do men really want, and today we're going to zero that in a little bit more about what men really want, sexually speaking, and how porn might affect male sexuality. Welcome once again to this program, Brad Coates. Hello.
Hello, Diana, and hello, listening audience.
Yes, and there you are in Hawaii. How is Hawaii?
Beautiful, as always.
Yes, indeed, paradise. So we did look at what men really want. We kind of broke it down, and your book, Divorce with Decency, has sold so well. It's in its fourth edition. You're getting ready for the fifth edition, and I'm thinking that here and there, because you're getting ready for the fifth edition and gathering information for this edition, you may want to ask me a couple of more probing questions about male sexuality. I'm not sure, because we didn't have a pre-interview. We usually do. Did you get my email?
I did, and I got some of the materials you sent me, and they're great.
Good, good. You know, as I explained to Brad in a note attached to the articles I sent, I've been doing bibliotherapy for about 30 years, and so I have quite a collection of articles. And most of my clients really like it that I give them four, maybe five articles at the end of each session, depending upon what their concerns are. So you liked the articles I sent.
I loved them, yeah. They may just find their way into the fifth edition of Divorce with Decency is coming out next year, so you may find some of that may find its way into this new book. I've done four editions of my Divorce with Decency book, and the University of Hawaii Press wants to do another one. I'm amazed. I can't believe that they keep selling out of this thing, but it focuses more and more on what each of the genders really needs as far as, you know, to make a relationship work. Although I'm trained as a divorce lawyer, I try to stay away from divorce or people any more often than necessary, and I do an awful lot, you know, not official counseling the way you do, but I try to do what I can to keep people on track as far as what it takes to make a relationship work. And part of the problem is definitely that men and women have, it turns out they're two entirely different genders. Who would have thought?
Yes, who would have thought? With quite different brains. We touched on that a little bit in our last show together and even in previous shows, because male and female brains are different. So as I understand it, Brad, you really did want to focus today. So in Hawaii, it is a little past noon. Here in Seattle, it's a little past 3. In New York, the show Progressive Radio Network is produced out of New York City, and it's a little past 6. So we have lots of different time zones. And then when the show is archived, people in various parts of the globe listen in. So it's it gets a lot of worldwide attention. And I really like that, don't you? Because people need good, solid information, don't they?
Yep. And I think, you know, we talked a lot about the different physical makeups and communication and relationship attitudes that men have that are different from women when we talked last time. And then we never got to the male sexuality part. And I know sexuality is one of your favorite topics. So
yes, it
you
is.
Know, I think probably a decent lead-in would be just the fact that, men generally view sex as being a more important activity in their life than do women. I mean, it's about 60% of men, but only about 35% of women will respond to surveys by saying sexual activity is important to their lives. So just for starters, men are almost twice as interested in sex as are you know, the average woman. Now, I realize that, you know, a lot of your clients, I'm sure the females are seriously interested in sex, and that's why they come to you. And I know that you're seriously interested in sex, but I'm talking about, you know, in a regular, normal, baseline relationship, it's a bigger deal for guys than it is for women. So that's one of the first thresholds you got to get over.
Well, that is correct. And I feel like a lot of men, and I see this in my practice, I hear this, a lot of men need more education about sex, and it turns out that pornography is the worst sex educator there is. Time magazine, and I have misplaced the article, but it was from, I think, May or June of this year, had a cover story on...
June 13th, How to Stay Married, Time magazine.
No, not that one. Another cover story in Time on pornography, porn.
And, oh, I see.
And so what it stated was that more and more men in their early 20s who are healthy, even some that have girlfriends, are turning up with erectile dysfunction. And there is some evidence that chronic porn watching with masturbation can rewire the brain and maybe even cause ED. But what I think is a surprisingly simple secret of great sex is for a man to stop trying to imitate what he sees in pornography. And that would be the rushed, mechanical sex that's entirely focused on the genitals. And instead, the man, I think, can cultivate the opposite of porn, and that would be leisurely, playful, creative, whole-body, massage-based lovemaking that includes the genitals but is not obsessed with them. And that's
one reason
that porn's a bad educator.
I think you're absolutely, totally correct. Porn is like the worst template that you could use especially for what women are looking for in sex compared to what guys are looking for. For men, you're looking for, you know, sexual variety and excitement and an immediate, you know, what I call an emission mission as far as an orgasm. And
yeah,
for women, it's a totally different deal. Women much prefer foreplay to the actual, you know, necessarily the act of sex itself. And they want to string it out an average. I mean, you know, an average male can ejaculate in 4 minutes, I think it is. And an average female wants 18 minutes of foreplay alone before. So, I mean, it's like four times as fast for guys as it is for, or more for, that it is for women. And on, you know, obviously to sell porn, you know, porn vignettes, you know, the whole deal is centered on, you know, just the actual sex act itself and the genitals. You don't see anybody hugging and kissing and smooching and giving each other hickeys and, you know, you know, citing love poetry to one another. It's just go for it. And it's exactly the wrong message.
It really is, and because our bodies, male and female, work best sexually in the context of relaxed, full-body sensuality. We're much more relaxed when we've had a whole-body massage, and that can make a difference. In terms of the woman's responsiveness and her interest in sex, and so I like for... women will say, you know, consider my entire body, every square inch, as one big erogenous zone. And I hear women saying they just can't understand why so many men explore only a few corners of this vast erotic playground. You know, a woman's body can be a vast erotic playground. I know you know this, Brad, because you're a very evolved man. You and I, you know, we're friends, and I know that, I don't know this firsthand, but I know you enjoy your sexuality, too.
In fact, I do.
Yes.
I've got the exact time frames here. Women generally take 4 to 5 times longer to reach arousal, sexual enjoyment, and orgasm than do men, i.e. an average of 18 to 25 minutes for a woman versus 4 to 5 minutes for men.
Yeah.
So guys obviously need to be focused more on touching, caressing, foreplay, and less on just, you know, how quick can I come? And that is, that's probably the single biggest, and porn just reinforces that. Because porn just totally objectifies the women.
Yes,
you
it
know,
does.
It, you know, for women, sex is all about, you know, it's relational. It's all about us getting closer in our relationship. It's not just about, you know, a quick thrill. And for guys, especially guys that have gotten educated to think that, you know, just, you know, how quick or how quirky can I get off, it's exactly the wrong approach.
I would say yes to everything you've said and add on a little bit why pornography is so bad for sex. It's I think it does indeed contribute to all of men's major sex problems, and these would include hang-ups about penis size, involuntary ejaculations, also called PE, premature ejaculation, ED, erectile dysfunction impairment, and sometimes ejaculatory difficulties where a man has when he wants to ejaculate, he can't. And so, and part of that comes because porn misrepresents how women become sexually aroused and experience erotic fulfillment. And I read this somewhere, but I think it's a good analogy. Pornography is like the chase scenes in action movies. So exciting and fun to watch, but definitely not the way to drive.
And you know? Not really even an integral part of the plot. So, you know, that is the problem. I mean, porn is an entirely different kind of sex with somebody basically visualizing an object as opposed to an interaction with a real human.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's bad news, and it's just insane how fast it's proliferating. I mean, it's estimated that, you know, 20 million U.S. adults regularly visit internet porn sites, websites. So it is really the drug of the new millennium.
Yes. And it causes these problems. And I have clients visiting me, and sometimes they don't stick. They're men who are chronic viewers of porn, and they come in saying, my wife or my partner thinks I'm addicted to sex, and I'll say that I prefer the word that you're compulsive about it. But in any case, instead of trying to work through any sexual problems with their partner, they're watching porn. And when they watch porn, they don't have to worry about pleasing a partner. They're more relaxed. They may not have erectile dysfunction watching porn as they masturbate, but with a partner, they do. And there's added performance issues, and maybe they're just not as relaxed as they are when they're watching porn.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a huge problem. I mean, you know, I've got some quotes in my book about kind of that the fantasy effects of porn can cause relationship problems, and I give a short list of some of those. Porn oftentimes glorifies violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of these scenes look like, you know, you've got women tied up. They look like more like rape than they look like, actual consensual sex.
Yes.
There's the proliferation of kiddie porn.
Yeah.
There's the fact that erotic material tend to give men an impossibly high target to aim for in the sexual field. I mean, you know, huge penises, big breasts, youthful and attractive partners, hardcore sex acts. I mean, you know, you try and take that home to your wife, and you're going to, you know, she's going to be scratching her head.
Well, and not only youthful and attractive women, but women who can't get enough. They're just,
yeah.
They're always enthusiastic, and it's just not a realistic portrayal of most women.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So the expectations are altered a little bit for a lot of guys. Actually, the violence glorifies violence. That is true. But there have been some studies that show that have shown that rape has gone down since the internet availability for pornography. And that's pretty interesting. Conservatives wouldn't want to hear that, but that is there have been several studies that rape has gone down. Maybe some guys are looking at it and getting some relief for their tension. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm sure that's a possible explanation. It's also true, you know, I as a lawyer know that whereas rape used to be a pretty hard crime to pin down, I think it's gotten to be a serious enough offense, is viewed as a serious enough offense by society, and people are coming out of the closet more often about it, the women who are the victims of it, and I think guys probably have more of a fear of being prosecuted for it than they used to in the mm-hmm. kind of date rape kind of days where, you know, how drunk you got the sorority girl was a thin line between, you know, consensual sex or rape.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what happens is that, you know, porn is, you know, it's addictive, it's isolating, it really is a, it's a major, major problem. There's a guy, Dr. Bob Arnott, who wrote a column that I quote from that he wrote for Men's Journal, answered a reader's questions as to whether watching too much porn can ruin a real sex life, and here's what Dr. Arnott said. He said he's got a new condition that he calls sexual attention deficit disorder, or SAD, and that posits that men who watch too much porn run the risk of losing their ability to perform in real life.
Oh, that's fascinating. Why don't you, if you have a link for that, maybe you can send that to me.
I can.
Okay, good.
So, you know, Dr. Arnott and other experts, they believe that porn can trigger feelings of self-centeredness, causing you to care more about your own pleasure than that of your partner, which is, you know, kind of a no-brainer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have the expectation that, you know, somebody's going to do it for you, you know, which is rather than you having to take charge of it yourself, which is another problematic aspect of this thing.
Another problematic aspect is that few parents discuss the fine points of sex with their sons. And so, because these young men, these young men have really easy access to porn on their smartphones. So I think it's important they're going to have access to this for the parents to talk about some of the things we're talking about, that this is not good education. You know, that girls are raised to be sexually passive, and as a result, some young men feel pressured to know the ins and the outs, as it were, of sex so that they can lead their presumably more naive girlfriends to intimate explorations. But a lot of these teenagers don't have a clue. One of the happiest, most satisfying, very few sessions I had was with a really fine young man who was 16, and he was still a virgin, and his parents paid for his sessions with me because they wanted him to have good sex education. This was an honor roll student, really wholesome, you know, young man, tall and handsome. And he also, when he had first intercourse, when he lost his virginity, he wanted to be a good lover. So he wanted the information. I was very pleased that his parents did this. It kind of is parallel to when couples sometimes see me for premarital counseling, and the parents will pay for that too. It's preventative.
Very, very smart. Couples actually see me. I've had divorcing clients pay for their kids to come have a, who are about to get engaged, to come have a session with me. I think, you know, I think the more education you can have on that is better.
The better.
And you know, you can answer this better certainly than I can, but I've read that marriage counselors will often report that if they can successfully fix in quotes, the sexual problems for their couple's clients, they can oftentimes bring at least the husband back into the fold. Have you found that to be true?
Yes. So say a little bit more, because I'm not positive about the context that you're asking about.
If couples are smart enough to go in for counseling, and and one of the issues that gets addressed is the sexual problems, the sexual functioning, the sexual expectations, that if that can get resolved, oftentimes, at least for the husband, I mean, women have a longer laundry list of what they expect out of relationships. We've talked about that before too. But for guys, oftentimes, you know, it's the fact that they're, you know, that the sexual part of their relationship seems to be broken or dormant, that's one of their biggest complaints. And that if you can fix that, you know, then you've got a chance that you can, you know, really succeed in counseling the couple to stay together, especially if you can get the guys to maybe prolong their foreplay, and women get a little more into it and aroused, and not dismiss sex out of hand, which, you know, that there is kind of a problem when people stop having sex for too long. That really does impact marriages. A third of third of all marriages that break up, the couples are reporting that it's the sexual incompatibility or lack of sex that is really the cause of the problem in about a third of all divorces. So sex is a big deal. It's an especially big deal to men, and not enough people take the time to learn about it the right way. And porn is probably the absolute worst way to learn about it. So you've got this sort of perfect storm. Plus, you know, with everybody living out of a handheld device and then having one hand free, and having all this stuff spew out of your phone, it's not a good formula for success.
No, I see many couples who have sex lives that are agony instead of ecstasy, and the rushed, mechanical, all genital love style that most men learn at the curbside, in the locker room, and from pornography ignores women's erotic needs and causes men's sex problems. I so often I say, hey, you guys, you need to slow down, understand women's real sexuality, really not the nonsense depicted in porn, and you need to appreciate leisurely, playful, whole body sensuality, you know, drop the porn and pick up the massage oil.
Well, one of the articles you sent me talked about what really turns a woman on, and I thought it was fantastic. You know, you talk about the fact that only 25% of women can achieve orgasm through vaginal intercourse alone. And, of course, that's where most guys start and stop.
Yeah, April Massini was on my program the beginning of July, and as she said in the man, Ask Men's, at, let's see, askmen.com, that she consulted with me about that article. And actually, Brian, my fiance, he came up with a lot of the tips, including sync up, which I think is a wonderful tip.
There's a whole series of wonderful tips in here, you know, you talk about. Yeah. You know, the oral sex, when performed skillfully, is a surefire route to ecstasy for lots of us. And, you know, learn to know where the G-spot is. I mean, you know, this is pretty specific, and it's pretty essential.
Yes, for the listeners.
I never knew, for example, that the clitoris had 6,000 to 8,000 nerve endings.
Yeah, twice
Holy
as many
cow.
As the penis, Brad. You know, we women, the clitoris is only function is for pleasure, whereas the penis obviously has a number of functions. So we women have a lot of potential for lots of pleasure. And so men need to be very...
There's got to be at least a couple thousand of those nerve endings that I haven't even discovered yet.
Maybe so. I don't know. Although you're pretty... as I experience you, you know, as a friend, you're a curious man, and you also want to be the best you can be in your career and in your personal life. That's what I think about you, Brad Coates.
Well, I'm glad somebody thinks about me. No, it is definitely true, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, ways to peel away the onion. You know, I think guys have got to get a lot more sensitive about how they approach women and how they prolong it and what women really want out of sex. I think women have got to get more realistic about the fact that guys are, you know, more into sex than maybe they are, and the average woman, I'm just, you know, and that they really shouldn't probably ignore that issue. I mean, I remember a quote from Bob Guccione, the old Penthouse magazine publisher. He said, for a man, sex is the single most important thing in the world. And dream experts have shown that men dream about sex more often than women do. So it's an issue for guys that needs to be addressed by women, and it's an issue for women that needs to be more skillfully addressed by guys.
Oh, I think that is very true. And the most common presenting problem in my practice is mismatched desire. And so it's usually the man with a higher desire, not always, but usually. And so I make several suggestions because a lot of these guys have had a lot of sexual rejection. And so they withdraw emotionally. They may develop a short fuse. And of course, these reactions tend to push the lower desire spouse or the partner away further. So I suggest some things: that you search for non-sexual triggers that arouse your partner. And, for example, many highly sexed partners try to boost the other's libido with sex toys, X-rated videos, or lingerie. And of course, these can all be really good things to spice up a relationship.
Yeah, I tried it, but, you know, I look so silly in lingerie.
You must. Although I know you keep your body fit, I loved, you know, I as a member of, non-resident member of the Outrigger Canoe Club, from when I lived in Hawaii, I get the magazine, and I often see you coming in the senior swimming meets and all of that, and the marathon. So, Brad Coates,
the key word is senior. Yeah.
Well, but you're keeping yourself fit, and that's key to, you know, good health is key to ongoing healthy sexuality. You've got to be, all the things you do to keep your health and your fitness will, I don't want to make this too personal, but it will help the fitness of your penis, because good health is good for your penis, too. And for erections are good for erections and the everything. So we need to talk about good health and good sex.
I think there's been a lot of studies that show that sex really is pretty healthy from a purely physical standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
I've read stuff where they say having sex twice a week can decrease your chance of having a heart attack by up to 45%.
Yes, that's right.
And that sex for guys is especially important because studies have shown that men who have regular orgasms have up to 50% lower rates of prostate cancer. So,
that's,
you know,
right.
Make that another selling point to your gals, guys.
Exactly. You know, so there are a number of studies that show that men who have sex once or twice a week as opposed to once or twice a month live twice as long after a certain age. So that gives new meaning to the man who says to his woman, "Oh, baby, I'm just going to die if we don't have sex."
Literally.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's so healthy. And then, of course, if you're both having orgasms, or, you know, then you're bathed in all this oxytocin and the endorphins. And it's just really the fountain of youth for people. If only
now,
they
I've
would.
Read, Diana, I've read that average sexual frequency, sex about 68 times a year, slightly more than once a week, is kind of anecdotal standard of having sex once or twice a week. Is that, have you found that to be in line with, did you recommend that? Do you recommend more? I'm sure you don't recommend less. But do you find people that have sex, you know, daily as opposed to once a week? Or
well, it turns
what,
out,
what do,
and
what do you think
some,
of the right?
There's some recent research, including in that piece I sent you from June 13th, the Time magazine cover story, that couples that have sex one time a week is optimal. And it appears that more than that isn't necessarily going to be better. I take a little bit of issue with that. If you're having really hot sex, more than one time a week can just add on to all the pleasure. But at least one time a week, and it's the equivalent of getting a $50,000 raise in terms of happiness.
I love that.
I do too. I mean, people are just happier if they're having regular sex, and they feel more bonded. They feel more connected. So, you know, this is all good news. You know, I wanted to just circle back, if it's okay with you, because I was starting to talk about if you're the partner with a higher desire, and it's usually the man. So I talked about searching for non-sexual triggers that arouse your partner. And I wanted to just say, the man, if it's the man, he needs to ask himself, what has my partner been asking or complaining about, and then make an effort to satisfy that request, because being responsive to your partner's need is foreplay. That's emotional foreplay, and women are dying for this. They're just so eager for this. I also talk about for men to not confuse denial of sex with intent to punish. This is a really important point. When, say it's a man's female partner, continually refuses her mate's sexual advances, it's really pretty easy to perceive it as punishment or personal rejection. And that's actually, especially as I go into the counseling and dig a little bit deeper, it's unlikely to be the case that it's not her intent to punish. So men need to get clear about this.
What do you see as a more viable explanation?
Well, it can be that she's angry, that she feels that he's blaming her. She's not taking into account that it's a couple's problem, and that that she wants more affection and demonstrative touch. You know, saying not every touch, hug, or kiss does not have to be sexual. It can be just for itself, you know, fun and enjoyable. And then, of course, a woman past, oh, I'm going to just say 45, but it could be sooner than that, is perimenopausal, or then past that, menopausal. So her hormones need to be adjusted, but they need to certainly be taken into account, because that can affect her libido big time. And yes, go ahead.
You know, you hear these statistics that talk about how men's sexuality peaks out at 18 or 20, whereas women, it's not until 38. Have you found that to be true in your counseling?
No. And I think that's actually one of the myths, that men peak at 18. I mean, imagine if you were a guy, 18, having awkward, fumbling sex, and you don't even know how to get more of it, but you've heard that, I'm peaking, I better make the most of it. It's not a good thing. No, men get better just as women get better. If they stay healthy, they get better with experience. And maybe even better with one partner that they're really in sync with, because they know that partner's body and responses. And, I'm not on my soapbox about monogamy, because it's very difficult for most people to maintain it. But having a partner that you know. So I don't think men peak at 18. I think women start to peak.
You don't think even metabolically, as far as testosterone production? I mean, I understand how, developing a skill set, as you get older and get more experience, that plays into it. But I always hear this part about how, your testosterone starts to decline, at 30, not even 40.
Well, yes, it does. It does decline, and I think men need to understand the ebb and flow of testosterone. Early morning, it's higher for men, sometimes 14 times higher.
Like 30% higher at daybreak is what I've read.
Yes. Mid to late in the menstrual cycle for women, high T women often have more sexual desire just before or after their periods. But testosterone, for it to play a factor with a blood test, it has to be shown to be very low for a man to get testosterone replacement, or for a woman. Now, it often does dip down a lot for a woman with perimenopause and menopause. And then testosterone may be appropriate. But that's, it's most men don't have a really strong dip in testosterone. It's more about health and attitude, really, and partners having
that's
enthusiastic partners.
That's good to hear, because I'm past 18.
I know. We already determined you're a senior who's fit, though. So that's the difference. And you've been around the block a few times, so you know about your body and you know about the female body. And that's all excellent, Brad.
I'd like to know more.
Sure. See, that's another thing. One sign of successful aging is ongoing curiosity. You're just a curious person. You want to know more and more and more. And that's why your fifth edition of Divorce with Decency is going to be fun for you, because you're going to get to put together even more information.
For many, many years, I was just a sort of meat axe down the middle kind of divorce lawyer, just dividing up people's property. And, I'd done I think this Coates and Frye law firm that I run here in Honolulu has done something like 25 or 30,000 divorces. I've been doing it for almost 40 years. It's much more interesting to try and get, peel away the layers of the onion and try and figure out, what you can do to really improve people's relationships, or at least try and understand what's going on, rather than, when everybody comes sobbing into your office just processing their divorce without ever trying to get to the root of the problem a lot of the time, like most divorce lawyers do. It became more interesting to me to try and get to figure out some of the psychology and sociology and statistics and, the whole, it's really turned into an interesting demographic thing, when you and I were growing up, you know, 80% of everybody was married. Now, less than 50% of all American adults are married anymore. I mean, it's really a changing landscape that is that's really interesting to track.
Yes, of course. It's all changed, and you've kind of gone with the flow, and to your credit, that's why you're writing a fifth edition for your book, because there's new information, and you're constantly updating things.
Well, I'll send you a copy when it comes out. Maybe it'll have some of the information you sent me. I love the fact that we can trade this back and forth, and I hope it's interesting to your listeners, because this, like I say, this really is an interesting phase in society.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, 40% of all the kids in America are being born out of wedlock, and 50% of all the kids born to women under 30, 50% are out of wedlock. I mean, it's a whole different. The nuclear family is dissolving in a lot of cases. The divorce rate stays about the same, but the marriage rate is dropping. So it is. It's an interesting time to be alive and to be charting these social trends. And you know, going back to the porn topic for a second.
Yes.
My wife is Japanese, and I don't think she spends a lot of time watching porn, or she hasn't cared with me.
I doubt it.
I
know Sachi.
But I'll tell you, it's a total breakdown in Japanese society now, because the males in the society in Japan society, so many of these young boys are really ill-suited for any kind of. I mean, we were talking about the skill set for romance and communication and how you really, you know, make a breakthrough with your opposite gender. They've almost given up on trying. And a lot of these Japanese young men are, you know, they're engaged in the manga, you know, the Japanese illustrated cartoons. They're starting to have, they're starting to develop like robotic sexual partners. Huge proliferation of pornography. To where the Japanese men really don't even know how to approach the Japanese women anymore. The birth rate is dropping. You know, it's really, and as technology gets more and more proficient at, developing some sort of, you know, siliconed up, plasticized, rubberized, you know, make-believe mate, who knows where this is going to go? I mean, they really are anticipating that there's going to be, you're going to be able to have sex with robots by, you know, within another 20 years, which is really, really shocking. Then you go from just watching porn to actually having robotic sex, which would be, you know, that could be, I'm glad I probably won't live to see that. That could be, that could be the end of the world as we know it, where people start preferring the company of robots to humans. But it may be around the corner.
I'd like to think that it's not. I think it could be more around the corner in Japan. You may remember, Brad, that I did some research on the guy geishas in Japan in the early 90s. I made 3 trips to Japan and developed a questionnaire that polled for very specific attitudes and behaviors among these guy geishas, these hosts, and
that sounds like a good job description. Where do you apply for that?
Yeah, I know. These guys turned out
geisha. I like that.
Yeah, these men turned out to be very idealistic. I even interviewed one woman who attended this club. AI stands for love in Japanese, and so this love club, the women would come. And they were, just to be able to afford the club, they were wealthy women. Some of them were professional women who did not want to marry a Japanese man. But they wanted to have companionship and perhaps even sex. So they were attorneys and medical doctors and so on. And then I interviewed a few women who were dropped off by their husbands, who felt kind of guilty because these were wealthy Japanese businessmen who were traveling all the time and neglecting their women. And in general, in that research I did in the early 90s, Japanese husbands were not to be raved about. in general. I heard a lot of complaints.
Yeah.
A lot of complaints from women. You know, that they'd, that the man would come home and the man would say, just he didn't have very many words. He'd say food, massage, bath, bed.
Well, that about covers it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
wow.
Yeah. So the Japan has, it would seem, a somewhat altered view of sexuality, and I've read too that the birth rate is way down in Japan, and it's a concern for
well,
a country.
Well, if you haven't
that,
got you know if you haven't got a good grip, so to speak, on real sexuality,
mm-hmm.
then you know then they these delving into the porn and other alternate forms of pseudo sexuality becomes all the more tempting because you don't know how to deal. You don't know how to go about procuring the real thing anyway. So then you start taking the other various options that, you know, like I say, technology now provides, which is, you know, goofy if you ask me, but I'm old school. And speaking of old school, another, you know, every once in a while I like to highlight, I don't know what the exact age group is of your listeners. I imagine it's all across the board, but every once in a while I like to highlight the, you know, some of these other overarching social trends, like the fact that there's fewer people getting married, more kids being born out of wedlock. Another one relates to us boomers. Divorce rates amongst the boomers are up like crazy. It's doubled amongst people 50 and older in the past couple of decades. Only a tenth of the people, 10% of the people who divorced in 1990 were over 50 years old, and now it's up to 25%, maybe headed towards 30. So they call it the gray divorce, where silver-haired people getting divorced.
Yeah,
and that's a popular new trend too. As we live longer, you know, people sort of outgrow just the idea of one marriage. They think they're entitled to serial marriages or serial something.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. It's interesting.
No,
fidelity is kind of a challenge. Although it's been proven that married people have better health, wealth, better sex lives, you know, die happier. Mm-hmm. If you can pull it off, a good relationship is worth its weight in gold. But fewer and fewer people seem to be able to do it.
So it does seem that way. And so from your perspective as a divorce attorney, can you give a few reasons why fewer and fewer people are able to hang in and have a long marriage?
Well, we've talked about it before, but I mean, you know, one of the biggest changes is that people don't have to stay married anymore. I mean, it used to be that guys had, you know, almost a hammer lock on their spouses, you know, having to stay married. They were the ones bringing home the paycheck, and they may have been coming home and saying, "Hey, I want I want food, bath, and bed." And not doing much else. Have their martini when they came in the door, watch E-SPAN, get in their Lazy Boy lounger, and you know, the wife would, you know, be stuck having to put up with it because she had, you know, so society frowned on divorce. And you know, economically, she was tethered to him. Now that women are outdistancing men in the workplace, that's no longer the case. I mean, now women they've got all kinds of different options, and basically the situation is that, you know, women with careers nowadays have their own income. They've got a network of friends. They got more associates. They've got retirement plans. One of the big issues is whether women are able to develop a workable retirement scenario without a guy, because they keep going in and out of jobs if they work at all. Old-style women like my mother didn't work at all, of course. But even if they do work, they work, you know, at some, you know, scut job until their first child comes along, and then they quit and they're out of the workplace for a while, so they're not accruing pension plans. Women were tethered to their men in almost an indentured servitude kind of a way in the old 50s style, you know, leave it to beaver kind of kind of, you know, households. But now, it, the whole deal's changed. My wife out earns me by about 3-1. You know, she could probably blow any time she wants. I hope she's not listening, but she could probably blow any time she wants. And more
I don't
and more,
think
that's,
she
that's
wants
the case.
To. I think she's crazy about you. But I know you're proud of Saatchi because she is so smart. And here she is, a Japanese. She's not even Japanese-American because she was born in Japan. And you hear her speak English and there's no accent. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. She's a smarty pants.
And so she can see these high-powered Japanese people coming to buy property, real estate in Hawaii, and be able to be very convincing and sell to them because she is so educated and so bilingual.
But, you know, she's... You know, I mean, there's lots and lots of very super successful women like her. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. But that, you know, historically, married women's finances have generally been far better off than divorced women. Divorced women have had the highest poverty rates amongst all age women in the United States. Women of all ages, if they're divorced, have suffered the biggest economic hit. It's less true now than it was, but it's still a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women, you know, don't like being in that underdog position anymore. I mean, that's really changing very rapidly where, you know, a lot of women, especially my clients that have gotten divorced that are, you know, 50 years old or whatever, 50 or 60 years old, they, you know, they have no desire to even think about, you know, especially women going out and having another relationship. They've had it with guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Japanese women have had it with guys, and British women have had it with guys. They got a group over there called the free males who deliberately stay free of males because they're not getting the positive portions of marriage are not flowing both ways, which
so
is a shame because you know there,
yeah.
there's this, in one of the materials you sent me there's a great quote by Mark Twain that. I'm quoting it real quick.
Yes.
To get the full value of joy, you must have someone to divide it with. And I thought
right.
that was a great quote. I mean, really, if
it's
you can find
quote.
Somebody to be your, quote, soulmate or whatever, you know, somebody
mm-hmm.
that goes the distance with you, sometimes the longer people are together, you know, the later life, it goes back to being the way, closer to being the way it was during the original courtship. Once you're retired and can take long walks together and travel and do stuff, you know, it's more like, you know, when you were originally dating and before the kids and the helicopter parenting and everything consumed you both. All of a sudden, if you can stay in there and go the distance, it's sort of like a born again courtship later on in life. So
I think there are also other reasons for reestablishing intimacy, and some guys are concerned because as they get older, they're having episodes of erectile dysfunction, ED, and men are brought up to take care of themselves and not to turn to others for help and support, and as a result, when these guys are faced with ED, many of these guys withdraw into a cocoon of silence. And sometimes this cocoon of silence is punctuated by angry outbursts.
Yep.
Or they can blame the women in their lives for not being sexy enough. And by the way, women often believe this. And over time, a man's silence and tantrums eat away at relationship intimacy. And
have you found in your practice, because you deal with this more than I do, but you know, with the coming of Viagra and female Viagra now, and does that help guys through ED?
Well, it can, especially with some additional education. It can help a guy because he has the confidence that he can get an erection with Viagra or Cialis or one of the PDE5 inhibitors, which helps the man produce more nitric oxide, which he needs to relax his arteries inside his penis. So it can
help.
Amazing
you know so much more about the male penis than any of the males I know, but yeah.
Well, that's part of my job description.
you really are. You know your stuff when we get right down to it. I've also heard, I haven't had to start the Viagra train just yet, but I've also heard that you can take it in much, much lower doses than those big pills. You know, what are they? I don't know how many milligrams are in the big blue pill, but, you know, I've heard people chopping them in halves and quarters and whatever,
yeah.
and it works out fine for them.
Sure. Most urologists that work with their patients about giving Viagra or Cialis or Levitra, or there's a new one, Stenda, they have to work with the patient to see what is the appropriate titration for the guy, and if some men will have side effects with one drug and not with the other. But in general, Viagra, Cialis, and so on, they're very safe drugs, and they've been tested now a long time because Viagra was approved in 1998.
Well, you're a doctor, for Christ's sake. Maybe I can get you to prescribe me some.
I can't do that.
I know.
I don't think you need that. But sometimes a guy who has occasional, I'm just speaking in general now, who has occasional erectile dysfunction can, and then we talk about some of the psychological reasons perhaps for this, and so it can help him with some confidence that he can have an erection and keep it.
Well, I think anything that helps somebody, a guy perform with his own partner rather than having to go out and constantly be seeking, you know, guys just, you know, they seem to feel they need novelty and different partners and more excitement and more options. And, you know, I just from the perspective of somebody who'd rather hold marriages together than break them apart all the time, I wish people would exhaust the efforts to make it happen within their relationship rather than having to constantly go outside of it. So.
Yes. Absolutely, that people will be happier. Brad, I commend you on the direction that you've taken your practice. And I know you go on the Love Boat, Princess Cruises, and talk about all of this.
I'm doing what I can, but I certainly have got a lot more to learn. And like I say, you're always great to talk to, and I think we're probably coming to the end of the show, but I want to tell you how much I enjoy talking to you, and I hope your listeners got something out of it. And I'll look forward to our next episode.
I will look forward to that, too. I always do, and we'll set that up shortly. I'm not hearing the music quite yet. They usually like us to. I kind of wanted to close with this, going back to the pornography business, and we started with that at the top of the show, that sex is not all about the penis, and this myth is an outgrowth of pornography, which
yep.
is totally penis-focused. And because great sex involves the whole body, and it's based on leisurely, playful, whole body sensuality for you and for her.
I'm with you, Dr. Dye. Okay.
I know. Thanks, Bradley.
Aloha from Hawaii, everybody.
Well, thank you, Brad. We'll talk again soon. Goodbye, everybody.